We're holding in Sanhedrin, page 88, about the eighth line, middle of Ois Kuf Gimel. We learned last time that the Gemara had said that when the Jewish people started worshipping Avodah Zarah, they weren't doing it because they genuinely believed in it. They were doing it l'hatalehem arayis b'fechim. They wanted an excuse to be able to do arayis in public, and they knew that Avodah Zarah, that the theology of Avodah Zarah is not going to interfere with that, and in fact, sometimes they would even promote it. Whereas we know with Hashem Elokeihem Shalayu Sone Zima, who Hashem hates that kind of thing, and therefore they would never get away with it. But then the Gemara asks, we have a couple of examples where we see they really did have warm feelings for their Avodah Zarah. And each time the Gemara answers, Basa da Aviku Bey, eventually they got attached to Avodah Zarah. Eventually they started, as we talked about last time, eventually the cognitive dissonance got too much. A person's not going to have that he's going to believe in something and that a person is going to be doing something and not actually believe in it. So eventually they actually came to believe in it and to develop feelings for it. An interesting thing they say in that regard, by the way, is, you know, we have in Krishna, in the third parasha, Vloisa Surachra Levavchem Vachra Yenechem. And the Gemara tells us, Achra Levavchem Zum Minus. So the question is, Minus is an intellectual idea. Shouldn't it be Achra Roshchem or whatever, or you'd follow your head in it? And the answer is that no. It seems like a very intellectual thing. But how does a person get into Minus in the first place? Not because it makes sense to him. Because Levavchem, because he has a taiva in his heart, and therefore that gives him the idea, you know what, let me then rationalize it with some kind of Minus. So therefore the Torah is warning you, don't start with that. Okay. So we're holding, as I said, on page 88, about the eighth line. Toshma, the Gemara says, let's bring another proof about this matter of whether they actually ever believed in Avodah Zarah. After they had come back and built the second Beis Hamikdash and rebuilt the walls of Yerushalayim and started getting Jewish life back together in Eretz Yisrael, the pasuk describes how that year, after Sukkot, they got together a massive gathering of everybody outside the Beis Hamikdash in the Harabayis, and they were fasting and davening to Hashem, and Levim got up and said a long tefillah to Hashem. We say parts of it in davening, and we say Ato Hashem Lavadecha Ato. Until Kamo Evan Maim Azim comes from that tefillah, the expression Veloy Shavalonu that we say Sanu Mesusecha, Veloy Shavalonu comes from their tefillah. A couple of different phrases in davening come from their tefillah. Anyway, the pasuk says Vayizaku B'Kol Gadol El Hashem Elokeihem. They screamed out with a loud voice to Hashem their God. So my Omer, what did they say? What was the content of the scream? Now, Marsha points out, after that, you have a tefillah that extends over 30 psukim. Why don't we say that was the scream? And the answer is, because if you look in the psukim over there, you will find that at first it says that there were a bunch of Levim that got up and by Yizaku B'Kol Gadol. Then it mentions a different list of Levim. Some of them are overlapped with the first list, but some of them are new, that tell everybody Kumu Baruchos Hashem Elokeichem Mina Olam Bada Olam Bivaruchu Shem Kvodecha, and they continue from there. So therefore, it's clear that there was a separate by Yizaku B'Kol Gadol and a separate tefillah. So what was the content of that by Yizaku B'Kol Gadol? Amr of Yehuda, the Tamer of Yochanan, or Yonason, they cried out, Baya, Baya, whoa, whoa. Baya is like an Aramaic, you have the word Baya, like Boy Rabashi, or whatever it means to want or to desire, so it's also a Lashon of Tachnunim. It's also related to in Lashon Kodesh, you have in Tanakh, Biadoni, it's all from the same church. Anyway. So this Yetzirah of Avodah Zarah caused the Beis Mikdash to be destroyed, the Kalya LaHeichel, and caused the Heichel to be burnt, meaning not just the house in general, but the Heichel, the actual Kodesh and Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Katlinu LaTzadikaya, caused the Tzadikim to be killed, and we even learned before that even the people who were killed at the time of the Churban, even if they had been Rishoyim in their lifetimes, are still now considered Avdei Hashem, the Aglinu LiYisrael Me'arayu, and it caused the Jewish people to go into Golos from their land, the Adayinu Merakid Beinon, and still that Yetzirah of Avodah Zarah is dancing among us. In other words, Mefoshim explained that during the time when the Jewish people were in Bavel, temporarily they were at least cured of the Yetzirah of Avodah Zarah. First of all, the shock of the Churban, but second of all, when you see it up close and personal, when you see the way the Goyim in Bavel and in other parts of Golos, well, how they actually live and how immoral and how corrupt and everything they are, then it tends to make Avodah Zarah somewhat less attractive. But now that they're back in Eretz Yisrael, living their own lives, and there's a danger they're going to fall right back into it. So they continue, they cry out to Hashem. This is the Anshe Knesset HaGdola. The pasuk mentions the Levim, but more generally it means the Anshe Knesset HaGdola. So called out this tefillah to Hashem. Klum yahav delon el kabuli agra. Isn't the whole purpose you gave us that yetzahara of avodah zarah is to receive reward by conquering and subjugating that yetzahara and get a reward for it? Loy ubein and loy agra bein. We don't want it and we don't want its reward. Meaning basically we can't take it anymore. It's too much for us. Marshall gives an explanation over here that, at the end of their tefillah, actually, they say that after they list all of the tragedies that befell the Jewish people and how every time Hashem saved us and so on and so forth, they finish off with the pasuk that we say in Tachlin, V'atet tzadik al-kol ha-ba'alenu, ki em asesis v'anachni v'shonu. So they're saying, we're not complaining, we're not saying, chas v'shalom, that you were unjust in giving us such a yetzahara. We find other gemaras where Hashem himself says that, it's kind of my fault that I gave you a yetzahara in the first place. The same way as a potter can always change the form of the clay, the same way I can always remake the Jewish people. And there's other psukim that express that idea, and other psukim that show that it's in Hashem's control. So now the Enshek Nesek Dola is saying to Hashem, we're not saying that you were chas v'shalom, we're not saying that there was something wrong that you gave us this Yetzirah all the time. You did truth in giving it to us. We're the ones who were Rishoyim by listening to it over and over. But nevertheless, though, at this point, we can't take it anymore. At this point, Anachnu Hoshonu, we failed, and now we're afraid. We're going to fail again, so please help us to overcome that. So the original Ein Yaakov just had the Chulah, just skip the rest of it because it's printed, and it's also in the Gemara in Yuma. So you'll find it in the Ein Yaakov in Yuma. Later printers put it into Ein Yaakov over here. So the Gemara continues the story. First of all, the Gemara. So again, the point is, in other words, that if they're saying we have such a powerful Yetzirah, doesn't that show that they actually had a Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah and not just for Arayas, like we said before? And again, the answer is Basa Davikube. This is, of course, after they had gotten addicted to Avodah Zarah. So then they were concerned that people are going to fall back into the same mental habits and start actually loving Avodah Zarah again. Well, Yasvi Tloset Yom B'Tanisa. They sat and fasted for 3 days straight, davening to the Eibishter to accept their tefillah. And then a note fell down for them from Shemayim that had the word Emes written on it. In Yuma, it has it actually the other way around. The note fell down that said Emes. Either way, it means Hashem agreed to their request, as the Gemara is going to say now. And then in Yuma, it has first that fell down, then they fasted the 3 days that Hashem should fully accept their tefillah. In other words, Emes would mean, fine, I accept. You're saying a valid point, but does that mean that Hashem is actually going to do it? They still need to. You see from that the seal of Hashem is truth. So therefore, it's like a human king when his ministers come up with a new idea, then he puts his royal seal on it. The same way, now Hashem's ministers, the Anshei Knesset Gedola, came up with this argument, and Hashem put his assent to it by putting emes. There's a famous vote from the Kotzker, that says, why is Chosome Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu emes? And he says, because anything else you can forge, but you can't forge emes because that would be sheker. The Maharal makes a point, since we have the Rambam mentions that Hashem is Amita Fimotzei, nothing else truly exists, as we know from Tanya, Hashem is the only true independent existence, therefore, very appropriately, Hashem's Chosom is emes, representing the unique thing about him. At this point, the Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah came out from the Kodesh Kedoshim in the form of a fiery lion. Why from the Kodesh Kedoshim? So one point is because Velo Mazel Selakim, the Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah is the ultimate in opposition to Elikus, and therefore it comes from the Kodesh Kedoshim. There's also the idea that the Kodesh HaKadoshim, every part of the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash represents some part of the human body. The Kodesh HaKadoshim represents the heart. And since the Yetzirah lives in a person's heart, Mekom Mishkan HaNefesh HaBahamis, as Alter Rebbe puts it, is in the Cholol HaSmali Shebalev, so therefore it comes out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And why a lion? It shows that you have to be powerful, you have to be strong, have a giver kari to overcome it. So it came out. Omelahu Novi Lisrael, the Novi who was there at the time, specifically Zechariah, says to them, Hainu Yitzra David Sechobin. That fiery lion that you see, that's the Avodah Zarah of Avodah Zarah. That's the Yetzirah of Avodah Zarah. Bahadid Kotaf Silei, as they were trying to catch it, Ishtimit Benisamine, a hair fell out of it, a hair got pulled out of it, and it felt pain. The ozo kalya ba'arba'mea parsi. It's a sound, the sound of this fiery lion, the yetzer hara, but as a roaring could be heard 400 parsa away, which is hundreds of miles. What does the hair represent? So one thing is in connection with the Yetzer Hara. The Gemara tells us in Sukkah that Lo Asid Lavan, Hashem is going to take the Yetzer Hara and shecht it in front of the Tzaddikim and the Rishoyim are going to see it as a hair, and they're going to cry, how do we not overcome that hair? And the Tzaddikim are going to see it as a mountain, and they're going to cry, how were we able to overcome this tremendous mountain? So the hair left means, in other words, like there is still a trace of that Yetzer Hara left. It is possible, and the difference is, in other words, you know, what does it mean that there was a Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah then, which we don't have now? It doesn't mean, unfortunately, you have, from then until now, occasionally you have Jews who worship Avodah Zarah as well. But that's more part of a general rejection of Yiddishkeit. Misyavnim, for example, and later examples throughout history, is they don't want anything to do with Yiddishkeit as a whole, and part of that is to be over to Avodah Zarah. What we're talking about, the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah that they had in the time the Torah was given until Churban Bayis Rishon, until now, until the beginning of Bayis Sheni, is really more kind of like the Yetzer Hara that a person might have now, let's say, for Lashon Hara, or cheating in business, or talking and davening, or whatever, you know. Okay, so I'm doing, maybe I know it's wrong, maybe not, but it's, you know, big deal. I'm still a good Yid with all of that. So that kind of thing. So now, all that's left of it then is a hair, which should be very easy to overcome.
Jewish Buddhists.
Yeah, unfortunately, I have Jewish Buddhists, Marsha on Yoma makes another point as well. The hair represents Esav, the Sawyer. So therefore, it represents that even though now the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah is going to be gone, and therefore that was one of the major causes of Churban Bayis Rishon, there's yet going to be a Churban Bayis Sheni if they're not careful, and that's represented by the hair representing Edrin. So the sound of it went 400 parsa represents that, in fact, Edom, the Romans, eventually took over Eretz Yisrael, which Chazal often tells us is 400 parsa. Omru, so now the Chachamim said, the Anshech Nesach Gerda said, hey, Fim Nevid, what are we supposed to do now? After all, it's screaming in pain. Maybe Hashem will have Rachmanus now on the Yetzer Hara and not allow us to do anything to him. Omruhu Novi, so the Novi, Zechariah tells them, Shadyua Beduda de Avra, throw it into a big pot made out of lead. The kasiyah ba'avra, and cover it with a lead cover. The shayif kole, lead absorbs the sound. So this way, like the sound of it will no longer be heard. And we find a pasuk in Zechariah. Vayomer, he says, zois harisha, this is the wickedness. So that means, and that was the first part when the Nabi told him, that's the wickedness, that's the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah that you were trying to get rid of. Vayashlich oisel techa efa, and the pasuk continues. He threw it into the efa, into a large container. Vayashlich has even hoiferes alpia, and he put a seal of lead on top of it. Okay, so that was the end of the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah. Amri, so now the Anshech Nesach Gerda said, Hoyove Eis Rotzen Hu, now that we see it's an Eis Rotzen, it's a time when Hashem is answering our tefillas, Niboy Rachmiya Yitzra Da'aveira. Then we should also daven that Hashem should take, that Hashem should allow us to take away the Yetzer Hara of Znus. After all, we know there were three things that caused Churban Bayis Rishon, Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayis, and Shlichus Damim. So now that we've taken care of Avodah Zarah, let's work on the next one, Gilui Arayis. Bo Rachmi, so they daven to Hashem for Rachmanus, Im Sibi Adayu, and sure enough, that Yetzer Hara was given over them too. Here at this point, the Gemara in Yuma adds a point that this Yetzer Hara personified says to them and says, be careful, if you destroy me, the whole world's going to be gone. So they imprisoned it for 3 days. Then they were looking even for a freshly laid egg, bas yoma, that was laid on the same day, for a sick person, and they couldn't find. If the Yetzer Hara for Znus is gone, then the Yetzer Hara in general for procreation, for period of Rivia is gone. So even the hens that already have eggs inside them have no more taiva to lay them. Amri, so now the Chacham said, hey, Nevi, now what are we supposed to do with him? It's a good point. The world is going to be destroyed in that way. Nibo Palga, should we dive into Hashem for half, that Hashem should take away the Yetzer Hara for illicit Arayas, but leave the one for normal period of Rivia? No, Palga Merakia, Lo Yavi, Hashem doesn't give things by halves. So they put out its eyes. It actually says somewhere in a bechil, they put eyeshadow in its eyes. This was a kind of powder that they used in those days. They could use it to cure eye diseases, but too much of it, as is often the case with medicines, would cause a person to go blind. And in this case, they used it to blind the Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah.
Forget our eyes.
And that accomplished the let igru inish say that at least now a normal person does not have a taiva anymore for his close relatives, his mother, his sister, or whatever. They'll still have a taiva for an ish, for nida, and so forth, but at least not for the close eyes. Marshall points out, on the face of it, there could have been another one. They could have asked as well. Right? What about the Yetzirah for money? After all, we have the Chol Levav, Chol Nafshach, Chol Moedecha. So he says that. So because that's the thing, you have the heart, the goof, and you have mumming. So here they managed to get rid of the Yetzirah that's associated most with the heart, which is the one with Avodah Zarah. They tried to do the one that has to do with the goof, which is Arayas, and they were only able to partially overcome it. And apparently, then they knew they weren't even going to try the one with mumming. Anyway, again, the Gemara had brought in this point to ask that on the face of it, you see that they had very warm feelings for Avodah Zarah. And again, the answer is that no, not really. They originally just did it to be mocked of them Arayas for Hesia, but eventually over time that caused them to actually develop feelings for it. And this is what the Anshek Nes HaGerla had to daven for Hashem to remove. The Gemara in Erchin, by the way, tells us that Yeshua missed an opportunity. When he came into Eretz Yisrael with the Jewish people, he would have had the same opportunity to ask Hashem to get rid of that Yetzirah. And because he didn't, is why in Sefer Nehemiah, in one place, when it mentions him right before this, it calls him Yeshua bin Nun, missing the hay. So he lost the letter of his name, representing that he missed that opportunity. Gemara continues. Getting back to matters of Avodah Zarah. Marsha explains that the next piece is we're going to be talking about Baal Pa'ur, and it's going to illustrate like this. We just said that the Jewish people worshipped Avodah Zarah only lahatzilah and arayis for fahesi. So then you have a perfect example with Baal Pa'ur. How did the Jewish people get into that in the first place? It's because of Bnois Midian. So therefore, that's where hence the next piece of Gemara over here. There was once a goita who was very sick. Omra, so she makes a promise, im tamida hi ishim acholya, if that woman, meaning I, recovers from her illness, telek v'tava v'chol avodah zarah shebo'olam, she'll go and worship every avodah zarah in the world. From her point of view, any avodah zarah in the world could be the one that she should credit for her recovery, let's say. Sure enough, she recovered, and she goes around worshipping every avodah zarah in the world. Kivin she gila pa'ur, she eventually reaches Pa'ur. Shalala kumrim mameh ovdim lazu. So she asks the galachim, what's the nature of the worship? How do you worship this thing? Amrullah, they told her, oichlin turadin, you eat beets or spinach. In modern Hebrew, terad is spinach. In Gemara terminology, I think it usually means beets. Whatever, it's some kind of thing that makes a person's bowels very loose. V'shoisin sheikha, and you drink beer, which also has the same kind of effect. Or matrizin, but for now, and then you go to the bathroom in front of Pa'ur. So she says, Mutav Shatachsa, he isha lacholya, be better that woman, meaning herself, should go back to being sick, but like tavid of a desert of a kach, rather than doing such a degrading of a desert. So as much as she's worshipping every other desert in the world, even this she realizes is beyond the pale. So how did there come about a Yetzirah? How did there come about an Avodah Zarah Pa'ur in the first place? There's a couple of interesting explanations about it. There's a Chassidish explanation that the original worshippers of this Getchka would be in such a frenzy, in such an ecstasy when they're worshipping it, that they would lose control of their bowels. So then what happens is the next generations after them said, well, that must be the way of worshipping it. They didn't have the ecstasy, they didn't have the excitement, but they only took on the chitzonius. So the famous Chassidish Avotan is, for example, when we have, let's say, for example, the earlier generations of Chassidim would daven late in the morning because they were sitting and learning Chassidus for hours. If we instead wake up, if we instead first roll out of bed at 11 o'clock in the morning and daven Shachas because of that, then it's the bedakwas, it's the same mistake as the worshippers of Pur. A different point, a couple of other different points, of Shamshon Afal Hirsch makes a point about it, that basically they were worshipping the animal side of the human being. The most animalistic thing that a person does is to go to the bathroom. So therefore, like, they're considering that the most important thing. And then there's a verse from Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, that's one of the famous Balei Amusar, that says that basically the underlying Yetzirah of Pa'ur, he compares it kind of like to the hippies in the 1960s. He was saying this, that the idea that there's no rules, there's no anything you want goes. So that devolved into this Avodah Zarah of Pa'ur that you don't even need to show respect, that you don't even need to show respect for the Getchke itself. Oh. Who told you?
Ginsburg.
Yeah, what about him? Yeah, whatever, okay. Now, continues the Gemara. Atem beis Yisrael einem kein. Now, on the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that we can darshan from the Pasuk that we see, on the other hand, the Jewish people are not like this woman. Because the Pasuk describes them, hanit smodim leval pa'ur, at the end of Parashas Balak, Hashem says, you have to kill all the people who are nitzmodim to Baal Pa'ur. So Nitzmodim, Meloshin Tzir, Kitzomid Posel, like a tightly attached cover. We have in connection with Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara, a Tzomid Posel, a cover that's very tightly smeared on and attached to the Keli. That's how connected you were to Baal Pa'ur. So you didn't even realize, you didn't have the seichel, in other words, to, like this woman, to realize what a degrading this Avodah Zarah this is. Why should we want to have anything to do with it? On the other hand, Moshe tells them, "Va'atam advekim v'Hashem alekechem." On the other hand, you are connected to Hashem alekechem. What's advekim? K'shtei tzmoras advukas zu b'zu. It's like two dates that are stuck to one another, but it's not quite so tightly stuck. So in other words, the idea would be that you had more of an attachment to Baal Pa'ur than Lahavdil you have to the Eidishte. How could you say such a thing? So that's the point, in other words, because given that they were worshipping Avodah Zarah because Lahat Lahem Arayas Mephahesia, then therefore, since they started out with that powerful Yetzirah, Marashah explains, with that powerful Yetzirah for Arayas, therefore, that made that now their attachment to Baal Pur was a much deeper one. On the other hand, for Hashem, on the contrary, outlaws for us various Arayas, outlaws for us B'nai Snokrim and whatever, and therefore their attachment to Hashem was not quite as strong. Yaakov, on the other hand, says there's something in it. It means, in other words, with Baal Pa'ur, they weren't punished until they were actually in Nitzmodim, until they were really tightly attached to him. Just if they'd just been Dveikim to Baal Pa'ur, it wouldn't have been so bad. On the other hand, with Hashem, even if they only Dveikim, Hashem Alekechem, then already they get Schar for that. The Masnisa Tana in a Braisa, we learn the other way around. And Nitzmodim to Baal Pa'ur, when it says that they were Nitzmodim to Baal Pa'ur, is less of an attachment. It's only like a bracelet on a woman's hand. It fits fairly tightly, but it's not so tight. It moves around. So the same way they weren't quite so tightly attached to Baal Pa'ur. As opposed to the Atamad Vekim, Hashem Alekechem means Drukim Mamash, means actually attached, actually connected thoroughly. Meaning, Marshall says, according to that, the vote is, again, how do they come to Pur? It's through the Benos Midian. Well, very well, then, that means it's Abba Shikluya Badover. It's a bottle dover, Mitela Abba, and therefore it's like a bracelet that can easily be removed, as opposed to your connection with Hashem is Abba Shikluya Badover, and therefore it's a permanent thing. Ion Yaakov says also a point that we know that Tabol the Tarim is Sayinose. So therefore, as soon as a person works on getting any kind of connection with Hashem, then he'll have a Dveikim, he'll have the strongest connection possible. As opposed to with Tumah, he has to make the effort, and therefore he's likely to end up as only Hanitzmodim, not quite so tightly attached. Okay. We'll turn now to Mishnayos Midos. We're holding Perek Aleph, Mishnah Gimel. Mishnah says, Chamisha Sh'orim Hoyu Lahar HaBayis. The Har HaBayis had five gates. Now, in this big diagram that I put over here, I didn't put the Har HaBayis because it would be hard to get it to scale. But here's a diagram to illustrate the Azores inside the Har HaBayis. We'll learn more details about it at the beginning of the second paragraph, but here's more generally, you have a square of 500 by 500 Amos, which is the Har HaBayis. So it had five gates. Shnei Shari Chulda min Adorim. It had the two Shari Chulda on the south, Meshanshin from Siviyatia, and they were used for going in and going out. Nowadays, you have, when you go to the southern wall, you can find there are some sealed up gates over there. Not everybody agrees that those are the original Shari Chulda, but there's good reason to think that they were. You have the original steps there from the time of the second Beis Hamikdash. You can go up them. They're outside the Hanabayas. You're allowed to go on them. And then, yeah, they have archways on top. The ones in the Beis Hamikdash didn't have arches, the Pashtos, but there is good reason to say that what we see over there is, in fact, remnants of the Shari Chulda. Why they were called Shari Chulda, a number of them, of course, associate them with Chulda HaNeviah, at the end of the first Beis Hamikdash, that she would sit in the plaza in front of those gates and teach Torah to the people and give them Nevuah. The Rosh gives another point as well. Huldah is like a weasel or a mouse or some rodent like that that lives in the cellars of houses. So it represented that when you'd go through these gates, you would have to go through tunnels and you'd have to go through a tunnel and stairs to get up to the level of the Harabayas. And in fact, they found behind those blocked up gates in the southern wall, they found Taka ancient tunnels, which seem to be Taka from the time of the first Beis Hamikdash. So those are the two Shari Huldah. Most of the original city of Yerushalayim was largely south of the Har HaBayis. Most of it is outside the walls nowadays. It's the area called Silwan and the area called Ir David, where they have a bunch of excavations and everything. So that's why the gates were on the south. That's why you had two gates on the south. Next, Kifoinus Min HaMayir. Then you had the Kifoinus gate on the west. That would be over here. So also Meshamesh Knesset V'Yetziyah, that was also used for going in and out. Eventually the city of Yerushalayim spread to the west, eventually included basically what's nowadays the Jewish quarter and the Armenian quarter and Hatzia, so therefore they needed a gate on that side as well. So they had a gate to go in and out on that side as well. Why it was called Kifoinus, there's again a lot of different explanations among Mephoshim. One explanation that a number of the Mephoshim say is it comes from a word that means the work of the garden. Because there was a garden near there in Yerushalayim, where normally you weren't allowed to have gardens in Yerushalayim because the fertilizer would attract bugs or whatever and make Yerushalayim less attractive. But here they grew some of the spices for the Ketores over there, so it was allowed, and that garden would have been near this western gate. Next, Todi Min HaTzofen. There was a gate on the north called the Todi Gate, which was over here. Loihoi Meshamish Klum, and it wasn't used for anything. Now, at the end of the Perek, we're going to learn actually an opinion of Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov that says it was used by a Kohen who was Tomei to leave the Beis Hamikdash. So either when we say over here Loihoi Meshamish Klum, it means it was generally not used, or that we don't want to specify that because if it was only used by Tmeim. At that time, the northern part of Yerushalayim was very sparsely, if at all, settled, so there wasn't really much of a need for people to go in and out through the north. Why it was called Shar Todi, again, there's a lot of different explanations. Some say that it means hidden. Some say it's related to a word for Tuma. Some say it's actually the word is not Todi, but rather Tri, which means a triangle, because we're going to learn later on that the lintel of it was shaped like a triangle, unlike most of the other gates had flat lintels. And then there's an opinion that Todi was actually the name of the person who donated money to build it. Okay, then you have Shar Mizrahi, then you have the Eastern Gate. Now, in this diagram, by the way, they seem to have gotten things wrong a little bit. The Eastern Gate is very clear from many places in Shas that was directly, as we're going to see actually now, it was directly opposite the Azorah and the Kodesh of and then the Hekel and the Kodesh of Hashem and everything. So in this diagram, it should really have to be over here. The fact that they put it over here seems to be a mistake. Nowadays you have in the eastern wall of the Har HaBayis, there's a big fancy looking gate over there that's closed up with bricks. They call it Shar HaRachamim. Some say that is Shar Shushan. Others say that the original Shar Shushan is actually further south. The capital of Ferach says as much. The capital of Ferach was a Rishon who moved to Eretz Yisrael in the 1300s and wrote one of the fundamental Sforim on the Halachas and the geography of Eretz Yisrael. And he describes the original Shar Shushan as being a good deal further south than Shar HaRachamim. So Shana Mizrahi, all of Shushan Abira Tzura. There was a picture of Shushan Abira on it. Why? So the Gemara tells us in Menachos two reasons. The second Beis Hamikdash, of course, was built when the Persian Empire was still ruling over them and Shushan was the capital. So one reason the Gemara says is so they should remember where they came from and be grateful to the Persian kings for letting them build the Beis Hamikdash and be grateful to Hashem for allowing it. So in token of that, they had a picture of the capital city of Shushan. The other reason, the Gemara says, is the Persian kings wanted so they should know not to rebel against them. Always remember that it was us Persian kings who gave you permission to build it, and don't rebel against us. In the event, the Persians ruled only for 3-4 years after the second Beis Hamikdash was built, and then they were overthrown by Alexander the Great anyhow. Anyway, so this gate had a picture of Shushan Abir on it. Shaboy Roya Kohen Gadol Sodev Zapara. So there, the Kohen Gadol, when he would go out to Har HaZeisim, which is east of Yerushalayim, when he went out to burn the Parah Adumah, the and all of the other people who are assisting, yeah, people, the people who are going to be burning it, the people who are going to be gathering the ashes, and so on and so forth, Yotzim Lahara Mishka, they would all go through this gate, and they would go to the Har HaMishka, otherwise known as Har HaZeisim. The Mishnah tells us in Parah that there was like a ramp or a causeway that they built going from this gate to the place on Har HaZeisim, so that way none of the people become Tomei from a possible Kever HaTahoim. You might have an underground burial that nobody knew about, so they had that starting at this gate and going from there. What's the Parah Adumah doing on the Har HaBayis? One of the Mephoshim explains, Pashat, you might have, the Sanhedrin, the Pashtus, has to check it one last time to make sure it has no movement. Next, Mishnah Dalad, Shiva Sha'orim Hoyuba Azara. The Azara had seven gates. So now we turn to the Azara over here. Now, if we look over here, we see a lot more than seven. We have four here, we have one here, we have a bunch of them, but our Tana, the Tana of our Mishnah holds that only seven of them are significant enough to be considered gates. So, Shloisha B'Tzofen, Shloisha B'Dorim, V'Echad B'Mizrach. Three on the north, three on the south, and one in the east. Shabadorim, starting with the ones on the south, you have Shar HaDelet. The first one is called the... I have the wrong side. You're right. Thank you. So the first one is called Shar HaDelek, which means the gate of the firewood. Through that gate, they would bring firewood to the Beis Mikdash. The firewood was stored over here. We're going to learn later on, and then they would bring it through this gate into the Azara. Sheni lo Shar HaKorban. Next was Shar HaKorban, which is where they would bring in korbanos that are kodshim kalim. That those could be shepherded anywhere in the Azara, so therefore they can bring them in through a gate in the south. Shlishi lo Shar HaMayim, and the third one is Shar HaMayim, which they would bring in the water from Nisach HaMayim from there, because the Shiloyach is south of Yerushalayim in this direction, so they would be coming from the Shiloyach, coming from the south, going to the Har HaBayis, coming through Shar HaCholda, and then coming to here. Later on in the Masechta, was the water gate? Yeah. Later on in the Masechta, also we're going to learn in the next parak, another reason is because Yechezkel describes a stream of water that's going to flow from the Kodesh HaKadoshim and flow out through the Heichel and then out this gate and then flow throughout the whole Eretz Yisrael and to all the water bodies in the world and sweeten all of the ones that are salty and then make them all capable of supporting life, etc. So there, and that stream is also going to come out through this gate. So it's another reason it's called Shar HaMayim.
What is
Shara Derek? It's a good question. I don't know. I haven't seen any good reason for that. It might be one of those things that sometimes we find the Gemara says Bevesa Lakim Nahalach Barogish. We wanted to do things in the Beis Mikdash to stir up a lot of excitement. So maybe if we just took it from Shara Eitzim and just brought it in through here, nobody's gonna notice. Like this, you make a whole fanfare of it, you're going out and you're going around and whatever, and then maybe. I don't know. Okay. Next, Shema Mizrach Shar Nikanor. The gate in the east is Shar Nikanor. This is the famous one where Nikanor donated to this Mikdash, and there was a storm, and you have the whole story in the Gemara Yuma, where we'll mention it briefly in the next parak, Es Hashem. So it's called Shar Nikanor after him. Ushtei L'shochas Hayulor, and then there were two chambers on either side of it. Achas Mimine V'Achas Mismole, one on the right of the gate and one on the left. Achas Lishkas Pinchas HaMalbish. One of them was the chamber of Pinchas HaMalbish. This is Pinchas in charge of the wardrobe of the Kohenim. He would be the one to dress the Kohenim for the Avodah and undress them afterwards and put away the Big Dei Kahuna and the Pashtos also to make the Big Dei Kahuna. There were lockers there. The Mishnah describes elsewhere that there were lockers for the different. Each Mishmar had four lockers, one for each of the four types of Big Dei Kahuna. It was a few days ago in Rambam in Shlosh HaProkim, and some say that those lockers were in here. Some say they were in another one of the chambers. The achas lishkas oisei chavitin. The other one was the chamber where they would make the chavite kohen gadol, which is the kohen mincha that the kohen gadol has to bring every day. Flour, consisting of flour and oil and levoina, and they had a chamber where they would prepare it, every day. Okay, Mishnah Hei v'Shabbat Sofen. Now coming to the north. The first gate is Shar HaNitzutz. So the first gate is called Shar HaNitzutz. And this was special. It was made like an achsadra, like an entryway. And it was all the other gates were just, you had a gateway in the wall, an open space in the wall. The Gemara elsewhere mentions that each one of them had a peruchus over it for privacy's sake. They also had doors which they would lock at night. So during the day, when the doors were open, they'd have a peruchus over here. But here they actually had an entryway that stuck out from the wall. And then there was a second floor built on top of it. In Mishnah Aleph, we said that the Kohenim, one of the places they would guard the Beis Mikdash, was in the Beis HaNitzitz, so they would be standing on that balcony on top of this entryway by the Shar HaNitzitz, and the Levium would be standing below. The Gemara and Talmud explained that wherever the Kohenim are being Shomer, there have to be Levium there as well assisting him. And this gate also had an entrance to the chayil. We'll learn about the chayil later on. That was the area between the surdig and the wall of the Azara. It was a 10-amah wide space called the chayil. So it had an entrance into the chayil. One of the major meforshim on our Masechta is named Moshe Kazis. He wrote a comprehensive Pirush on the Masechta. So he explains that what it is basically you had the, when you went out of that entryway, you had two ways you could go. You could go straight ahead to go past the chayil and into the harabayis, or you could turn to the side to go into the chayil. That's what it means that it had an entrance into the chayil. Sheni lo Shara Korban. The second one was called Shara Korban. Now, we already had Shara Korban in the north. It's actually the first one, the correct Girsa, it says on the side over here, was supposed to be Shara Bechoris. This one was called Shara Bechoris, a Bechoris, Kodshin Kalim, so you don't need to shest it in the north over here, so therefore they can bring it in through the south. This would be Shara Korban, which is where they brought in the Korbanus, the Kodshin Kodshin, through there, because they have to shest them right here in the north. So here they show Shara Korban is in the Beis HaMoked, but here our Mishnah is saying that no, Shlishi lo Beis HaMoked, the third one was Beis HaMoked. So apparently this diagram got it a little bit wrong. It should have been first Shara Nitzitz, then Shara Korban, and only then Beis HaMoked would be somewhere around here then. So the third one was the entrance to the Beis HaMoked. And the Beis HaMoked means the place of the bonfire. They had a bonfire, they're burning constantly because the Kohanim are walking barefoot and there's different opinions among the Mefarshim whether the Harabayis and the Azaris were roofed or not. If they were roofed, then they may have protected them a little bit from the elements, but if not, that either way, the Mizbeach definitely was unroofed because you had to have the smoke be able to go up. But whatever, with the Kohanim going barefoot and only having one Kohanis, they would often get chilly, so there was a bonfire here always to warm them up. The Shara Nitzis, by the way, I forgot to explain. The reason it was called that means the gate of the spark. So Mefarshim explained they would keep another fire burning there all the time. In case the fire on the Mizbeach went out, they would take a spark from there and use it to relight it. So the Mishnah says, Mishnah Vav, Arba L'Shochas Hoi B'Veis HaMoked, within the Beis HaMoked there were four small rooms, Kikitonis P'suchas L'Traklem. They were like little rooms that are open into a main hall. Stein b'kodesh or Stein b'chol. Two of these rooms were in the Kodesh area and two were in the chol. So some Mefarshim explain, like we have in the diagram over here, that the Beis HaMoked itself was built half in the Azara and half outside it, and therefore two of them could be in one part and two in the other, as long as it has, the rule is, the Gemara tells us from Sachim, as long as it has a door in each direction, then it can be considered Chetzi HaKodesh for Chetzi HaChol. The Rambam, on the other hand, draws it as being completely outside the footprint of the Azara. He draws it as being like here. Anyway. They had wooden beams where the ends of them stuck out of the wall to distinguish between the Kodesh and the Chol part. Because in the Kodesh part you can't sit and you can't lay down, for example, and you could eat Kodshim there and so forth. In the Chol you have different rules, so you need to be able to distinguish. They used the ends of wooden beams for one thing, because you're not allowed to build exposed wood in the Azara. We'll talk about that as we go through, Bez Hashem. So therefore, in token of that, they had wooden beams sticking out of the wall in the Chol area to represent. Here you can have wood, but in the Kurdish area we cannot. What were these four little rooms used for? Marovis Dremis, the one in the southwest, so this one, he hoist a Lishka's Korban. That was for Tloy Korban. This was the Lishka where they kept the lambs for the Korbanus. They always had to have at least six lambs in there for the Korban Tomid, because they had to check them a few days in advance, like they did with the Korban Pesach and Mitzrayim, to make sure it has no moon. Dremis Mizrachis, the southeast one, that would be here. He hoist the Lishkas Lacham upon him, that would be where they made the Lacham upon him. The Lacham upon him, according to this opinion, had to be, there's different opinions about it in Menachas, but one opinion is it had to be baked in the Azara, so it had to be baked in a room that had the Kedusha of the Azara. Mizrachis Tzvonis, the northeastern one. Bog Gonzu Bnei Chashminoi as Abnei Mizbeach Shashik to Malcha Yavan. The Chashminoim hid away there the stones from the Mizbeach which the Yavonim had defiled. They brought Korbanos to Getchkes on it and so forth. So now the Gemara explains in the Avodah Zarah that they weren't sure what to do with it. They can't use them for the Mizbeach. They were used for Avodah Zarah. They can't recut them and use for the Mizbeach because the stones in the Mizbeach can't be cut. So they weren't sure what to do. So they hid them away in this chamber. The Mishnah in Talmud mentioned that chamber was also used. They had it was also Lushka Sachisomis. They also had the system in the Bis Mikdash. If you needed Nesachim for your Korbanos, it was a few days ago in Shlosha Prochim of Rambam. Instead of supplying your own Nesachim, and you don't know where they made Altaris of Kodesh, you would go to this office in the Bis Mikdash, pay the guy in charge over there money. His name is Yochanan and Pinchas. Get a voucher from him, get a receipt from him, take it to another office, give them the voucher, and they would give you your Nesachim. So that this room was also used for that purpose as well. Shonis Ma'arovis, and the northwestern one, Bo Yodin, Levesa Tvila, with that they would go down to Toivol if a Kohen became Tomei, as we're going to learn in later Mishnayos, and he would go down through over here. There was a staircase, and he would go down underground to a mikveh. There was a mikveh over there too. We'll learn about that in a pair of days. That was for the Mitzrayim to Toivol before their Korbanos Abroad. But if a Kohen, in particular, we're going to talk about later in our Perek, that if a Kohen became Tomei while he was on duty in the Bais Mikdash, then he would go down through that room over there, and there was a staircase over there to go down to an underground bathroom in Mikveh. Okay. Yon Yon Mashiach Gola. Chok Tammuz. So now, about the Bais Mikdash. When Yaakov wakes up in the morning and realizes, how did I sleep in the basement, in the place of the Bais Mikdash? He says, Manura hamokam hazeh, how awesome is this place? And Unkelus translates it, Leis dein asar hedyet, this is not an ordinary place. So what does that mean? The Rebbe explains, the world in general is called asar hedyet, because it was created with Asara Ma'amaris. It was created with 10 statements of Hashem, and the statements of Hashem are called Milin Dehedyoita. They're, so to speak, mundane statements in the sense, like a king talks about kingly things when Hashem is talking about creating, Shemayim Ba'aretz and rocks and animals and plants and whatnot. This is all like mundane relative to Hashem himself. But now the Bais Mikdash is not Asar Hedyet because Asara Ma'amaris all involved the Shem Elokim. Vayomer Elokim this, Vayomer Elokim that, as opposed to the Bais Mikdash, was Ochen Yesh Havaya B'Mokam Hazeh, Yaakov says. So therefore, it's not Asar Hedyet, it's not an Asar Hedyet, because it's much higher than the rest of the world. It wasn't created using that same process of Hashem's speech, which is Milin Dehedyoto. Continuing with Halachos of Tzitzis. So we're talking about what you do with tzitzis that are ripped. So now we talked about last time as far as the tzitzis themselves. That one opinion is you could actually throw them out, and the other is that you shouldn't do minig dizoyin, but that you don't have to put them in gnizah, and nevertheless there are bali nefesh that put them in gnizah or use them as bookmarks. Now what about the actual talus for the mitzvah itself, the actual begad? So then, you have to keep away from it in the sense that, for example, you can't use it to wipe or to use after the bathroom or use for any other tashmish maguna, any other kind of degraded thing. So what you do is, for those you don't have to put in shemus, but you just throw them away and they rot away on their own. So like you can't use them as shmatas to clean your house, but you can throw them in the ordinary, it seems like you could throw them in the ordinary trash. Now, you are allowed to go with a talus cotton with tzitzis into the bathroom. It's not considered a bizoyin for the mitzvah, because it's not considered such a bizoyin for the mitzvah. However, b'med v'ram amurim, that's the one that you have that you normally wear all day. It's not specific to davening. So your talus cotton, you wear all day. It's not specific to davening. Therefore, there's no problem taking them to the bathroom. But the talus shal mitzvah, we only daven in them. So it's not, so you shouldn't go with them into the Beis HaKisei. And for the same reason, if a person goes to the bathroom on Yom Kippur, he'd have to take off his kittel before he goes to the bathroom for the same reason, because it's also meant specifically for davening. The same thing actually applies to the gaudol as well, which is why you take off your gaudol. I believe I've heard it said that the same thing that you think about, we wear a gaudol also only for davening. So therefore, so there's a similar, I think there's a, you could use anything basically, but in practice, you could use anything for a talus as well, right? It's true. I have heard it said that you're supposed to take off your gaudol before going to the bathroom as well, but maybe you're right. Maybe it's not so risky. No. In any case, the Alter Rebbe continues. You are allowed to sleep, even a talus shel mitzvah, because sleep is not considered such a gnai. So therefore, for example, Yom Kippur, you're wearing a talus all day. If you're chafed to them all the while in your talus, not a big deal. For the same reason, you're allowed to give them to a goyish or dry cleaner. Again, it's not considered a bizoyin. And one more thing, as far as bizoyin, be careful that the tzitzis don't drag on the ground. That would be a bizoyin for the mitzvah. Very commonly, people sit with their talus and their tzitzis hang off, and they don't notice that's hanging off the chair, so you do have to pay attention to that kind of thing. One other thing, real quick, before we break for Meyer, if we only have a minute or two. So that, over there I put up was a schematic of the Harabayis itself, of the original Harabayis, the 500 by 500 Amos with the Azores inside it. We'll learn more about it in the second paragraph. This over here is a diagram. This is an aerial view of the Harabayis as it looks nowadays, or to be exact, as it looked when there were some British surveyors that went and did a survey of it in the 1860s. So you have over there the Dome of the Rock. Some say that's the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but there's many different opinions about that. You have all kinds of different things over here, all kinds of different underground things that some of them may be from collapsed things of the Bais Mikdash, some of them may be things that the Goyim dug later, who knows. To give you just one example, they describe in their survey, they said at one point, for example, they were going through one of these half-buried tunnels. They came to a point where they saw there's a door. They opened the door, and behind it is blocked with earth, and they couldn't go any further. So who knows? Maybe that door is one of the shardim of the Besmikdash. We know those sank into the ground. Maybe it was a door from one of the Lashokas or something that's still buried underground. Who knows what? But so we don't really know what all of these different shapes and things, what they...
What's under the waqf?
Now it's also under the waqf and they don't allow, of course. But yeah, there's at least a dozen different opinions of how to map the original Hanabayas and the original Azaris and all onto this. Because after all, it's not a square. It's supposed to be a square of 500 by 500, and this isn't a square. So there's like a dozen different opinions how to map it, and because of these uncertainties, like we talked the other day, is why most Rabbanim say we're not allowed to go into any part of the Hanabayas, because you never know, we might actually be going into the part that actually has Kedusha.